Hello and welcome to the Arrow Video Podcast with Sam and Dan. My name is Dan Martin, special effects artist and podcaster, and I'm joined, as ever, by my delightful co-host.
Oh, Sam Ashurst, and I'm glad I'm still delightful. I'm a writer, I'm a director, and I'm a podcaster, and I'm very glad that I'm still being described as delightful, even though I chose Evil Ed, which I hadn't actually watched before. So this is going to be an interesting episode, Dan. I am desperately hoping that you're a big fan of Evil Ed, because I thought I would be based on the iconic VHS box art, which we have here. Shay owns this tape. Shay loves this movie, and so I just assumed that I would love it too. But spoiler alert, I did not. And I'm hoping you did at least like it. Dan, how do you feel about Evil Ed? Or is this going to be a really awkward episode?
So I first saw Evil Ed after I picked up a bootleg of not the director's cut as it's presented on the Arrow special edition, because it didn't have the extra footage, but the uncut version of the original edit.
Okay.
Which was unavailable over here for a long time. At the Watford Film Fair in 1996. The film itself was released in 1995. I've heard a bunch of people call it the first Swedish splatter film, which just shows what they fucking know. I was delighted by it when I saw it. You know, I was a child. And I think it is a very base, slapsticky, childish kind of horror film. And I hadn't seen it again for a long time. I got the Laserdisc of it when that was available, because that was the only other way it could be got uncut. There was a DVD of it, but that was cut. So I got the Laserdisc. I'm not sure I ever actually watched the Laserdisc. I'm one of those awful collectors. And then when Arrow first put out the special edition, the 3-disc, it was one of the discs I took with me to Canada when we were doing Possessor. And I had my travel PlayStation,
right,
so I could keep watching films for the podcast. I keep watching Region B Blu-rays for the podcast. And Tracy, Tracy Loader, was round mine one evening, and I cooked a pasta dinner, and we smoked some perfectly legal cannabis on the balcony. And then we were like, oh, let's watch a movie. And I was like, have you ever seen Evil Ed? And she's like, no, I don't even know what that is. And I'm like, oh, it's this mad Swedish movie made by, Gordon Lundstrom was one of the filmmakers. And she's like, whoa, Lundstrom made a picture? And I'm like, yeah. It's like a crazy splatter movie. It was a complaint about the Swedish censorship at the time. Mm-hmm. So they just went out there and made like the most offensive, like over-the-top movie that was deliberately like breaking every taboo that you could have in cinema. And she was like, that sounds great. And then we got 20 minutes into it, she's like, yeah, I'm gonna go. And I did not finish it. I was like, yeah, like, fuck, it's tiring. I don't know if I care for this. And I hadn't watched it again until we rewatched it for this episode. And I rewatched it, and I watched the longer version, the director's cut, and I watched it all the way through. I had a better time with it this time than I did last time,
mm-hmm,
but I wasn't able to recapture the giddy heights of the first time I watched it in 1996. And I think part of that is the ubiquity of the great films that it was complaining about not being available, like having been lazily censored in Sweden,
right,
at the time. And then part of it is something that Jen and I have talked about a lot over the years, which is if you put a bad joke in your movie, even if it's like narratively important that your character is telling a bad joke, you still have to factor in the fact that you have a bad joke in your movie.
Yeah.
If you like, you know, if it's narratively important that your character is fucking terrible at singing, that doesn't mean that your audience doesn't have to listen to someone who's terrible at singing when they're doing that thing.
Yeah. And something else that we've talked about quite a bit is this idea that also don't put a reference to an incredible movie in your bad movie, because then I'll wish that I'm watching the amazing movie instead. Like the Fly poster, the Evil Dead 2, I think Return of the Living Dead's in there as well. And I was just sitting there going, oh, man, I wish
Mouth
I was
of Madness,
those.
Like all these things.
Yeah.
Like all, like, yeah. And they're all held up with like the smallest amount of tape possible so as not to do damage to the posters because they can't afford frames.
Yeah.
But they also don't want to damage their beautiful original posters. Yeah, it's a little bit of a mess. Like I can see it for what it is, which, mm-hmm, is a labor of love.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the thing that I was able to lean into this time when I wasn't showing it to someone, when I didn't have that like emotional burden,
yes,
is that the effects actually still stand up. Like, there's some pretty fucking great practical effects in there.
Oh, absolutely. And
there are, like, it is chock-a-block with references. It's like, it's like a, it's like a bingo card of a movie.
Yeah, and weird references as well. I wasn't expecting a legend demon ripoff to pop up.
Well, but that's what happens when you let effects artists make a movie.
Yeah, no, true. Brilliant effects, absolutely. There's an arm cutting sequence made me incredibly uncomfortable. Really, really well done. And yeah, when it started, I was so excited. I love the concept and the tone. It reminded me of early Peter Jackson, but unfortunately it very quickly became early Peter Jackson without the charm or the heart.
I think so much of that is down to the fact that it was badly dubbed.
And we
touched on this last episode, but I genuinely think I would prefer this movie if I could watch it even without lip sync, dubbed into a language I didn't understand and then subtitled, because they chose to do like slightly poorly mixed stylized dubbing because that felt like how they watched movies in Sweden,
right?
And it was a joke, it was fun for them, but as I said, you put a bad joke in your movie, your audience still have to sit through that bad joke. And if that bad joke is all of the audio for the entire goddamn film, then that's going to be a very difficult watch.
But then, you know, sometimes it works. Bad Taste, I remember having weird dubbing stuff, and it did add to the tone of it. And I do wonder if that was part of the ambition with this. But for me, the sense of humor just feels a little bit smug and self-congratulatory about it, which is a really kind of harsh thing to say, but that does carry over into the extras as well. It could just be that they're a tight-knit gang.
We're an outsider,
yeah,
exactly, as an in-joke.
Exactly.
But the problem is that the in-joke is only a couple of degrees off a lot of stuff that we've all said or felt around genre cinema over the years, especially those of us who are old enough to have been like collecting and watching pre like James Furman leaving the BBFC. Like, when you had to like go and buy these things off someone who was also selling porn, like, when this stuff was grot, when this stuff was filth, when this stuff was back alley dealings, and you were like, oh yeah, if you want to buy Driller Killer, if you want to buy Cannibal Holocaust, if you want to buy Evil Dead, then you're gonna have to do dealings with someone who's also probably selling like pornography that you're very uncomfortable with.
Yes. With all of this said, this film does have its fans, and I think a great deal of them are people who did watch it in their younger days before all of this became a little bit of a moot point. And I can see why people would love it at that time. You know, it's a Horrorhead's dream. There's loads of meta references, gruesome gore. There's a Garfield plushie stuck to a fridge. What's not to like?
Yeah.
So I'm really not shitting on anyone's love of this film. It's normally me who picks something that I haven't seen before because I assume it's going to be amazing, and then I don't enjoy it, and then I feel bad because there are people listening to this who are expecting a loving of Evil Ed. But you know, we've got to be honest. We've always got to be honest. And what you were saying last time about the kind of algorithmic feel of Late Night with the Devil, this also feels like AIR, because it's referencing things, but it's not getting them quite right, or it just looks like a knockoff of a knockoff, really, a lot of the stuff in here.
This movie is the six-fingered hand of the Sam Raimi output.
There you go. But for the fans, this is an amazing release. Once again, you know what Arrow's like. It's a special edition with more material on the movie, more material from the movie that was never seen or released. Lots of comprehensive extras, has everything you ever wanted to know about the makers of this film and their past, present and future. Certainly even more than I wanted to know. and there's a couple of Easter eggs too. Like, this is a really lovingly made release. You can tell that the producers who worked on this really did care about this film. What were some extras, highlights for you, Dan?
Hearing the guys talk about where they came from and like how they all got together and made this movie was incredibly heartening. Like I really enjoyed that. And then there was a special feature about like what they'd all done since. And they've all got careers out there, but the other filmic endeavors that they've made and the clips that they showed from them were like a little depressing, especially considering how kind of like surprisingly successful this picture was.
Right.
Like this was literally defying every censorship law in the country in which it was made.
Yes.
And then it sold to multiple countries for international distribution. And ironically was subject to the same censorship that it was decrying in many of those territories. My favorite thing, and this is a nerdy effects person thing, was Göran Lundström, when he's interviewed, it appears to be re-sculpting the fridge creature, the close the door you Nazi monster, which
Gremlin
is probably
Saga.
My favorite moment in the film. Bright light, yeah, exactly. And it's very obviously a clay paw from the original mold that he is just like tickling with a tool. He's not re-sculpted that's a plastiline that's been poured into the mold that the original was struck from. And I find that hilarious, because that is not something production will have asked for. That is something that Göran will have volunteered, because they don't know that's possible.
Right, exactly.
But Göran's like, oh, what if I'm doing this? And you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's another story behind it. Maybe he was making it for someone else or refurbing it for himself. Like, maybe there's something else going on. But that was probably my favorite moment on this rewatch.
Yeah, and it's funny, like, there is something very admirable about making a movie to protest censorship laws. And, you know, there is a fine line between punk rock and trolling. And I do wonder which side of the line these guys fall under. But at a base level, I do think it's admirable to protest draconian censorship stuff by using your creativity as a weapon.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you compare these guys to someone like Olaf Entenbach or even Jörg Buggereit, whose work I actually prefer, that it is certainly more polished. It's certainly more like well put together. I don't think it has the artistic solemnity of Buggereit at his best.
Right.
But it certainly isn't as base, crude, and devoid of value as Entenbach at his worst.
Right.
So,
yeah, let's escape this conversation on that positive. I have other things that I was considering saying to that, but I think I'd like to end this discussion on a positive for all the fans out there who love Evil Ed and have Evil Ed t-shirts that they're wearing right now listening to this, as one solitary tear creeps down their left cheek, on their face obviously, not anywhere else. We're going to move on to recommendations based on the movie, Daniel. And what do you have for us based on Evil Ed?
Well, so I'm torn because I've got like a bunch of recommendations.
I'll bet you.
So, is this a week where you've got one, or have you got a bunch, Sam?
I have two, but they are unusual recommendations. So, if you've got stuff that's way more tied to this film,
right,
then
in that case, I'm going to do one, and then I'll do a double bill for the next one.
Perfect.
So my first one is a Japanese exploitation horror that I first saw around about the same time as I saw Evil Ed. I think it actually may have been made the year after Evil Ed, even though if you look at it, it looks like it was made like for tuppence many years earlier, because it's from that like peculiar shot on video genre era of Japanese film where the indie stuff suddenly started to look really, really cheap, because the erotica stuff that they were shooting on analog tape started to like bleed into how they were making genre cinema. So things like Gekidama and this specifically. So this is, I always knew it as Naked Blood Splatter from the old bootleg titles, but I think its official title is Naked Splatter Blood, or Splatter Naked Blood. I honestly don't know what order those names come in. It's almost a portmanteau picture. It's by a director called Hisayasu Sato. A group of people go to a clinical trial to have a drug that can cure the common cold tested on them. It turns out that that drug has a side effect, which is that it transforms pain into pleasure. A little hellraisery there. And then the three female patients that take it, you then have a little like sort of portmanteau story about each of them and how it affects their lives. And it goes from the like peculiarly esoteric with this woman that works with computers who has a digital dream in which she becomes digital, which is quite tame from a horror perspective, but quite nice in a sort of like peculiar like retro digital art house perspective. But then you go all the way through to like one of the women is a chef, and her experience is very much like more Meatball Machine, Tokyo Ghoul Police, kind of like proto horror. And she like deep fries one of her hands and eats it. She takes one of her eyes out with a fork and eats it. She cuts off one of her nipples with a knife and fork and eats it. And then the denouement of that sequence is she performs female genital mutilation on herself with a knife and fork and eats it. And I remember being like, oh my fucking God, this is the most extreme thing I have ever seen in my life. And the effects, while the cinematography itself isn't particularly beautiful, and some of the effects are a bit hokey, some of the effects are very, very good. And I think this was one of the things that Japanese cinema, and this end of Japanese cinema, this sort of like neo-analog Irogoro Japanese cinema stuff did so well, was it would like punctuate middle of the road practical effects with absolute trailblazing special effects, where you're like, why is this, like, how is this in that film? Like, this can't be the same. Many of our viewers will have heard the urban legend, possibly apocryphal, I really hope it's real, about Charlie Sheen being at a party in the Hollywood Hills and watching the first Guinea Pig picture, Flowers of Flesh and Blood, and being so convinced that it was a real snuff movie that he called the FBI, and that leading to that film being unavailable in America for several years. Because it was on a snuff list, and I think I've probably talked before about making my poor flatmate Mark, when I was in my first year at university, because he had previously done a degree in Japanese at SOAS, sit and watch the making of Guinea Pig, the unsubtitled making of Guinea Pig with me, that I had managed to track down, and translate it for me so I could write in a little notebook time codes and translations so I could subtitle it myself. And it turned out the one word he couldn't translate, with hindsight, I didn't know at the time, was silicon. So when I was trying to work out what they were saying they had made this prop out of, and this was at the beginning of this being a material that was used in our industry, and they're talking about what it turns out literally translated to oil jelly, but we didn't know what that meant, and it was a silicon hand that was from Flowers of Flesh and Blood number 2. It was Devil's Experiment that Charlie Sheen saw. But yeah, all these Japanese horror films were like essentially horror show reels. They were basically what I had been making in my teens, but much better, where you'd come up with an idea for an effect, and then you'd just thread a 6-minute plot around it to just like to contextualize it, to give it some other shots to make it make sense in a cinematic space. It's not an easy watch. I'm not really recommending it in a go and have fun with it, but I think that in the same way that Evil Ed was kind of pushing boundaries and playing with this stuff, Naked Blood Splatter was doing the same. But Naked Blood Splatter was doing it in a sort of like earnest way that's possibly worrying, but also like more genuine, and I think that genuineness adds legitimacy to it that is maybe missing from Evil Ed.
Wow, yeah, that sounds incredible. That has kind of blown my recommendations out of the water, because there's a good chance that everyone listening to this has heard of both of these films, but I will start by saying that if I'm going to watch a movie about the film industry with lots of references and clips from fictional films, with some exploration of the impact of media violence alongside some very intense depictions of media violence, I'm going to put Once Upon a Time in Hollywood into my Blu-ray player. We've discussed it on the show before, so I don't need to go into it. But for me, it's a masterpiece. It's my favorite Tarantino movie, and I recommend it, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, for all the Evil Ed fans out there. Dan, what's next from you?
Well, so I'm going to give you my double bill, but I am going to make mention of the fourth one that I was going to recommend, mm-hmm. just because you mentioned Tarantino, and it's Tsukiyaki Western Django by Takeshi Miike.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like an unfair recommendation. I love Miike, but he can make some right old bollocks. And I think Tsukiyaki Western Django kind of falls into the latter category. It's got a lot to recommend it. It's like on paper, it's a delight. But it massively outstays its welcome. And one of the problems I have with it is that he seems to think it was hilarious to have his non-English speaking Japanese cast speak phonetic English, which makes it borderline unlistenable. And this is what I was referring to in the previous episode when I said that Sam had done a call forward, because I think I would genuinely love this movie if I could watch it dubbed into literally any language that I didn't speak and then subtitled back into English, because it's so distracting and so achingly bad to watch it in this like poorly delivered English. And the thing is, like, why the fuck am I complaining? Like, Miike's not English. He's making it for a Japanese audience, as far as I'm concerned. So, like, his Japanese audience are probably loving this. Like, everyone in that fucking film speaks like that one white baddie in a Jackie Chan picture. It's so bad.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not for me, and that's fine. Like, he doesn't have to make films for me. That's not his responsibility. But I just wish there was, like, I wish there was more of this being able to choose a foreign. Like, I tried to do it with Evil Ed. I genuinely looked at the audio setup page.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was like, oh, come on, have a foreign language. Let me watch it in German. Let me watch it in French. Like, anything that isn't English. Anything that isn't the dub. The funny, bad dub. But no, unfortunately, it's all in English. But my real recommendations are actually a double bill of films I've worked on. Films that have strikingly similar concepts to Evil Ed, and I struggled to find, and maybe Sam, maybe our listeners even can recommend me films that play with this concept before Evil Ed, but maybe Evil Ed was the first one. I'm thinking specifically of Filmmakers Going Mad and the line between reality and the world in which their films exist blurring to the extent that they become murderous. And so the two films that I've worked on that run on that line are Prano Bailey Bond's Censor, which I'm incredibly pleased to have been a part of, about literally someone, sort of the antithesis of Ed, in that they are a willing censor rather than an editor who is being made to censor material that they find distasteful. And then, you know, as Ed does, sort of takes their campaign of sanitization to the world, whereas Censor kind of exists as a midpoint between Evil Ed and the George C. Scott picture Hardcore.
Oh wow, yeah.
And I love it. I absolutely love the movie. And then the other one I was going to recommend that I did is the very recently out, I think possibly still in cinemas in some countries, Stop Motion. Yeah, which we touched on last time, which again is about an artist working on the fringes of society, dealing with the solitude that brings, and slowly losing grip on reality as a result. And the thing is, I think that this is both what I liked about Evil Ed at the time and the thing that disappoints me about it when I revisit it, is that it's such a rich seam to draw from. And it was such an opportunity for them as people who were, if not the first, certainly the first I can think of at the moment, but if not the first, then definitely, like, you know, kind of at the coalface of that, mm-hmm. that mining of that seam, that they didn't do more with it.
Yeah. No, my final recommendation, I'm literally just going to read what I've got in my notes here. A very different take on how violent movies can impact the people who have to watch them for a living. My respect for Censor is absolutely elevated by Evil Ed. Slow but smart, with some beautiful set pieces and a fantastic ending. And you worked on it, Dan, which is another reason to watch it. Censor, I recommend it. So, yes, once again, we have crossed the stream. So I'm glad that you had multiple movies to recommend this time, because, yeah, I love Sansa. I really do. And Prano, I can't wait to see what she does next, because it's a really, really fantastic, masterful debut. So, yeah, all right, let's move on to recommendations based on the past couple of weeks. I'm going to need you to sandwich me again, Dan, so please go first. What have you got for us?
Absolutely. So I had a bit of time away from home recently, so I took a stack of discs with me. So I'm afraid there's going to be a little bit of a pattern in my thing. But the first movie I'm going to recommend is from 1990. It's the Radiance release of Dennis Hopper's directorial effort, Hotspot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Starring Don Johnson, Virginia Madsen, mm-hmm. and Jennifer Connelly. Mm-hmm. I'd never seen it before. I'm ashamed to say I put it on first of the stack of discs I took, because it was one of the only English language pictures I took with me.
Daniel.
And I was very tired.
Fair enough,
and
yeah.
I just wanted something I could watch in English. And I was not ready for how unbelievably horny it was. It's too horny.
Too horny for Dan.
Too horny. I don't like too horny. Too horny. Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. Some of the sexual politics were a little bit questionable, but it reminded me a lot of a film that came later, Oliver Stone's U-Turn, which I really enjoyed as well. But it's a psychosexual neo-noir with Don Johnson playing a guy who's like, one of the things I really liked about it is that, like, you can completely, one reading of the film is that he feels like he's playing everyone, like he feels like a puppet master. There are, or at least there is intent within it that he is manipulating everybody, but at the same time, he's just like a mote in the chaos that is life. And I think that one of the things that's really fun about it is that that chaos is almost always brought about by people being too horny. Everybody wants to fuck all the time, and everybody. It's a chaotic aspect. Like, you cannot make plans when people are that horny. Because everyone is unpredictable and everyone is too horny.
Well, speaking of the trouble that can come from people being too horny, my recommendation, solo recommendation this week, is Eileen, which was released last year. I missed this one in theatres. It was out at the same time as Godzilla Minus One, and I ended up seeing that twice instead of seeing Eileen once, which I now kind of regret a little bit. Eileen, I wish I'd have supported it, because it stars Thomasin McKenzie as a repressed prison secretary whose life is changed by a compelling new co-worker played by Anne Hathaway. And it's a little bit to die for, albeit much browner than that movie is, if that's a way of describing a film. But yeah, I really, really enjoyed Eileen. It's based on a book that I haven't read, and so it has got a slightly strange structure. It feels like it ends at the midpoint. I haven't had this experience watching a film for a long time. But yeah, structure's weird. But fantastic performances, especially from Thomasin McKenzie. She really is one of my favourite actresses working today. She's so good. And Anne Hathaway is as great as ever. However you feel about Anne Hathaway, she is a pretty magnificent actress. So Eileen, I recommend it. And I'm sorry I didn't see you last year, because you had a chance at being in my end of year top 10 list. But yeah. Eileen, have you seen that one yet, Dan? I think it'd be a good one for you and Jen.
No, it's on my list. Yeah. I've been told by a couple of people I'd like it, so I keep on meaning to see it.
Yeah, very, very interesting. All right, what's next from you?
Well, so I said there was a little bit of a theme. Every single disc that I took with me was a Radiance disc.
Yes.
So it's another Radiance title.
Hello, and welcome to the Radiance video podcast with Dan.
Well, I think it's the natural progression, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, of the Arrow. Yeah. We've just gone with Fran.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Arrow. I'm sorry. We're back. We'll be back with you next time. I watched his unbelievably beautiful edition of Messiah of Evil.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. There's so much love in this edition. It is like core boutique releasing. Absolutely beautiful. For those of you who don't know Messiah of Evil, it's a super fucking weird little indie picture. It's got all the, like, it's a tight 90. It's got all the, like, the grain and grunge of the, I assume it was shot in 16, I don't know for certain, films of that era. But the thing that makes it kind of interesting is, or kind of unique, I should say, there's a lot of things that make it interesting, is that it was written and directed by Willard Huyck and Gloria Katz, who went on to write for George Lucas. They wrote American Graffiti together. They wrote Temple of Doom. They even wrote Howard the Duck, Sam.
Oh, wow.
But they started off writing this film, which is and writing and directing this film, that is much more aligned with Let's Scare Jessica to Death and its tonality than anything you might expect from those other credits. It's, again, like the cult sequences in Late Night with the Devil feel like they owe a little bit to this picture. There's a lot of that kind of wandering, handheld, wide-angle, 16 cine, leering, like almost drunk cam footage to it. Which again, like, you know, Let's Get Jessica to Death, Season of the Witch, mm-hmm. like all these pictures that were kind of forced into that aesthetic for budgetary reasons, but it's become so evocative.
Yeah.
And it's just, yeah, it's just an absolute linchpin of that aesthetic. It's really beautiful, and there's no better way to watch it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a really, really great recommendation. I still haven't picked up this release, and there's a good chance it's sold out by now. But if people can get it, they should, because wonderful, wonderful movie. Excellent. All right. Well, that's it for this week. No extra features. We're back to not doing that anymore. So all that's left is for us to tell you how to stalk us online. Dan, how can obsessive fans find out about who you're killing next?
I'm at 13fingerfx on various platforms, mm-hmm. and you can add, you know, your dot blue skies or your whatever to the end of that to find me in appropriate places. Feel free to come at me about my feelings about films. I will stand steadfast, but also be very apologetic about criticizing your personal taste, because ultimately we're all here to enjoy art, and it's a subjective experience.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's no right or wrong answers when it comes to art. It impacts us.
Yeah,
all.
Don't tell me what I can and can't like, and I won't tell you what you can and can't like, other than this platform that I've been given where I will tell you what you can and can't like.
Well, mostly what you can like, because even like,
yeah. I'm here to celebrate, not to denigrate.
Everything I said about Evil Ed is absolutely not meant to impact on anyone's love of this film. It's just my personal response to it. I do not ever want to ruin anything that people enjoy, because any little scrap of happiness in this cursed life is worth hanging on to. So, don't judge me. I won't judge you.
That's it, man. We're all here to watch movies and eat pizza.
Hey, there you go. All right. Well, on that note, I'm going to go have some pizza myself. But before I do, I will tell you, you can follow me on Goodreads. I've read 62 books so far in 2024 at the time of recording, and it will be even more by the time this episode goes up. So if you want to see what weird, slightly film-related stuff I've been checking out, I've read the new book by Miranda July. Wonderful, wonderful read. And the 40th anniversary edition of the Evil Dead comic book adaptation, which is really fun. It adds new stuff to the movie and an internal dialogue from Ash, which puts his character more in line with how he is in Evil Dead 2. So if that's of interest, that's an excellent graphic novel that I checked out recently. Or on Instagram at SamAshurst23, the number 3. And yeah, that's it. Any final thoughts, Dan?
No, that's it. Keep watching weird shit. Recommended stuff we haven't mentioned. If you feel like there are things that, like, called out to you and you're like, why the fuck weren't you talking about that? That seems like such an obvious recommendation. Yeah. Maybe we don't know it. Yeah. Maybe, you know, this is the whole thing. Like, things that feel obvious to you. I'm a terrible litmus for this. I think people have seen all the weird shit I've seen and I've not seen... I said last week, I've not seen Joker last fortnight.
Yeah.
You know, we all miss stuff. We all miss big things and small things and recommend us films.
Please
do. We need more recommendations.
Absolutely. Yeah, and maybe we'll read them out on future episodes. But yeah, thank you so much for listening. And we promise to be more professional next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.